नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स Good afternoon, everybody. This afternoon, I want to talk on understanding, clear understanding of our practice. Sometimes this is called clear comprehension. In Pali it is called Sampajanya. Whenever we do something, whatever we do, we certainly must understand why we do what we do. If we don't understand, we simply will be groping in the dark, not knowing what we are doing. And we may spend a lot of time, energy, even money for a long time, and in the end we may see we have achieved nothing. Buddha is like an architect. You know, when an architect draw a plan for a house, the entire house is in his mind. So when he draws it on the paper, all the builder has to do is to follow the map. Every door, every window, every hinge, every nail, everything is very clearly planned and laid on the paper. And the builder just follow the map. Also, when you drive somewhere, you have to have a map. Otherwise, you may spend a lot of time, and you may be a very skillful driver. You may have a hybrid car, but you may have a lot of gas in the gas tank. Engine is the best in the world. But if you don't know where you go, you will spend a lot of time, energy, gas, even money, driving here and there and never getting where you want to go. So, when we practice meditation, yesterday I talked about the goal. Today I want to talk about the understanding of our practice. And this is absolutely necessary, right understanding. Right understanding is the forerunner of all wholesome activities. Sammaditti pure javang. Right understanding goes ahead always. Whether we practice mindfulness meditation, concentration meditation, whatever meditation we practice, we must have a very clear picture in our mind, at least as to what we are doing. So especially these days, there are so many meditation centers, meditation teachers, meditation books, instructions, and so forth and so on. The more we have, it should be clearer. But the more we have, more confused people can get. because different people give different instruction, they say different things. I am not going to tell you that what I tell you is the best, what I tell you is the clearest. I am not claiming that. But you got to make your decision. You have to understand from whatever you hear from various teachers and read various books and so on, what the clear method is. This is what is called clear comprehension. This is a prerequisite of all meditations. Commentators have divided, classified clear comprehension into four. One is clear comprehension of the purpose. Second, clear comprehension of the domain. Third, clear comprehension of the suitability. Fourth, clear comprehension of non-delusion. Boy, when we talk about non-delusion, we get even more deluded. So, let us begin from the first. Clear comprehension of the purpose. Yesterday I mentioned the purpose. What are the purposes? There are fivefold purposes. Just to recap, let me mention them again. The purpose is fivefold. First purpose is to purify the mind, clean the mind. Of course, when you look at something, you at least, if you wear reading glass, you have to clean the glass to see it very clearly, or wipe your eyes very well to see things. Similarly, it is the mind with which we deal with everything. So, the first purpose is to clean the mind. Second, to overcome sorrow and lamentation. Third purpose is to overcome pain and suffering. Suffering you can overcome, but pain will continue. You have no way to stop pain, even though you may stop suffering. Therefore, suffering and pain are not identical, although there is some relationship, but suffering is one thing, pain is not totally different, but it is not the same. For instance, the Buddhas have attained full enlightenment by overcoming suffering. No more suffering for the Buddha. But the pain he still had. You remember when Devadatta threw a rock to kill the Buddha, a small splinter went and hit the Buddha's foot and he had pain. When I say this, I recall a story of somebody's misunderstanding even this statement. Perhaps I will talk to you. I don't want to be so sidetracked from my theme. You may, during question period, if you ask me that question, I will answer that. So anyway, Buddha had pain, no suffering. Then the fourth purpose is to fold ourselves into the right track, come into the right track, that is following the Noble Eightfold Path. That's called Nyayasa Adhigamaya. And the fifth purpose is to attain liberation, attain Nibbana. Now, so the purpose of our meditation, first we have to understand clearly the purpose of our meditation. That is called clear comprehension of the purpose. keeping this fivefold purpose in mind, we talk, we walk, we eat, drink, dress, turn, lift, whatever activities we are engaged in, if we are really serious meditators, we must have clear understanding of what we do and how this practice enable us to reach that goal. That is very important thing. So what is the goal? Fivefold goal. Some people say when you practice clear comprehension, you very popular simile is washing dishes. They say wash dishes with clear comprehension. What is the clear comprehension they want you to have when you wash your dish? Make sure that the dish is clean. No dirt. All the grease are gone. All the soap is washed. And the dish is spick and span. No more dirt. Do you need very special meditation for that? If that is clear comprehension, all these dishwashers in restaurants are practicing clear comprehension. I don't think that is that simple. And that does not bring you one iota close to your goal by just cleaning your dish and paying attention to dish. But even when you are washing dishes, if you have a clear understanding of your purpose, then you will know exactly what you are supposed to do. Remember, the first purpose of our meditation is to clean the mind, not the dish. How many millions of times you have washed dishes and cleaned the dishes? Have you cleaned your mind at the same time? How much you have cleaned your mind while washing dishes? You rather polluted your mind while washing dishes. See this dirt, why didn't he clean this plate and why did he do such and such a thing to the plate and so forth? You might even pollute your mind by thinking wrong things. So, if you are a serious meditator, even while washing dishes, this is just almost mechanical. You know, pouring water, applying soap and dipping it in the sink and almost mechanical. At the same time, you must go to the mind. That is what you are going to purify. That's why you are going to clean. Look at the mind, even at that time. See whether greed arises, anger arises, resentment arises, fear arises, jealousy arises. See what is arising in the mind. See if you have a friendly thought in your mind, compassion in your mind, appreciate your joy in your mind, or some insight in your mind to see impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, selflessness. See whether these things are arising in your mind, whether you are mindful of those things. And those are the things that we have to cultivate all the time. So Buddha said, we always must go to the Buddha. And he is our guru, our architect. He gave us the perfect plan because he perfected himself. And therefore he put this perfect plan for us. And he said, go to the mind. Look at the mind. and see what is happening in the mind. Friends, it is not the body that attains enlightenment. The mind attains enlightenment. No matter how much we clean the body and dish, we never attain enlightenment. We have to clean the mind. So, this is a very common example that many people use. That is why I used it according to my understanding of clear comprehension, to make it, more sense. So, he said, when we walk forward, we have to understand clearly, with clear understanding, what happens when we walk forward. What happens when you walk backward? Walking backward doesn't mean that we walk, looking at this side and walking backward. No, we turn around and walk. Sometimes when we hear or read some individual's explanation of clear comprehension, we feel very sad. I tell you one example, many examples. One, there was a Brahmin called Brahmayu. He was 120 years old. He had heard of the Buddha and he had never seen him. So he sent his student to check the Buddha's behavior and to confirm and verify that he is an enlightened person. So this student went and spent 7 months observing the Buddha's behavior, listening and seeing what the Buddha spoke and how he moved. And these students saw the Buddha practicing clear comprehension. Buddha did not have to do all these things just as we do, but as a habit, he continued to practice mindfulness, clear comprehension all his life until he passed away. So he saw the Buddha turning very mindfully and did everything mindfully. So he saw the Buddha turning mindfully. He came back and reported to the teacher that he turned his head with his body. Turn his head with the body, not turning head without turning the body. Normally, when you hear that, you might think that he might have had a stiff neck. Because when you turn, normally you turn, you don't turn the head, the body along with the neck, with the head. This has very powerful, deep meaning of this expression. Turning the head with the body, meaning, so he compared him to an elephant, because when elephant turns, elephant turns with the body, because that's innate nature of the elephant. In order to protect his neck from the lion's attack, because lion always jump onto the neck of the elephant, because that is the only small part of his body for the elephant for the lion to grab, and lion also drive his canine teeth into his arteries in the throat to kill him. So therefore the elephant has, when he turns his head with the body so that the body will protect his neck. And this was expressed in that particular discourse. It's called Brahmāyu Sutta in Majjhima Nikāya. And Buddha was compared to elephant, and it was a metaphor. In this metaphor, this gentleman said the Buddha turned his body with the head. Not literally he did that. What it means is, he always, Buddha's neck is compared to mindfulness. Satipatthana gyuho so, in Pali. Satipatthana gyuho so. The Buddha's neck is mindfulness. Panya siso, the head is wisdom. And the rest of the the factors of enlightenment is his body. So he always did everything with mindfulness. In order to express this behavior of the Buddha, this Brahmāyusa disciple told his teacher, he moved like an elephant. He never moved without mindfulness. So Buddha asked us, when we walk, you walk mindfully. When you turn, you turn mindfully. When you bend, bend mindfully, and so forth. He said, every movement, every activity, we have to perform with mindfulness, with clear comprehension, with clear understanding of what is involved in that particular movement. In any movement, what involved is changing, impermanence, very tiny, minute, subtle changes we can notice. And when the mind is fully engaged, preoccupied with these movements, changes, there is no room for the mind to have unwholesome thoughts, greed, anger, and so forth, because mind is fully occupied in this training, in this practice, in this event, action. During that period, mind becomes clean. Mind becomes clear of all the impurities during that short period of time. We keep the mind fully engaged in the particular activity. Activity does not itself does not have greed. When we move, the movement doesn't have greed or hatred or confusion. Movement is just an action. So when the mind is fully occupied with something which is free from greed, hatred and delusion, mind takes the characteristic of that particular action. That means the mind also becomes clean and pure for that moment, that particular moment. What is our purpose of meditation? Is to clean the mind. So this is one way of cleaning the mind. Keeping it fully occupied on something which is free from greed, hatred and delusion. We want to remove the mind, remove greed, hatred and delusion from our mind by doing something. This is one of the things we had to do to clean the mind. So with clear, this is a very, very profound teaching. With clear comprehension, clear understanding, we have to move. And Buddha gave a series of examples, you know, walking, talking, sitting, standing, lying down, eating, drinking, even urinating, defecating, wearing clothes, and even going to bed. Be mindful. Sleep with mindfulness. Somebody can ask, how can you sleep with mindfulness? When you go to sleep, you just lose everything and you become, you know, you succumb to sleep. But when you go to bed with mindfulness, even for 2-3 minutes we remain mindful, and we may lose mindfulness and we may fall asleep. Next moment when we wake up, it is the mindfulness that comes to forefront of our mind, reminding us to practice mindfulness. For this purpose, the Buddha said, even when you go to bed with mindfulness, so that your purpose will not be forgotten. The purpose is to clean the mind. If that is the purpose, we got to do that over and over again, constantly, all the time. This is, of course, not just casual meditators' practice. Buddha gave this instruction to very serious meditators. If you want to be very serious meditator, this is how we have to practice it. So, clear comprehension of the purpose is a wonderful training. We have to keep the mind asking us, does this practice help me to get closer to my goal? We always keep that in mind. Ask this question. Does this practice help me to reach the goal? Get closer to my goal? And yesterday I mentioned the goal, and I reminded now. So, this is what is called clear comprehension of the purpose. Second is the clear comprehension of the domain. What is our domain? It is called gochara. Pali word is gochara sampajanya. What is gochara? Go means cow. Cow. Go in Pali. Chara means the movement, or the cow's area where cow always walk, stay. What is the cow's pasture? Cow's domain is the pasture. So gochara is the cow's area, the field where the cow always graze. So Buddha used this word gochara to as a like a metaphor to tell the meditators where they keep their mind, where they should focus their mind. This word go is used for various things like gavesi, king such a gavesi. Gavesi means the farmer going looking for his cows. Gava esi. The word gava comes from the word go. Esi means searching, looking for. Gavesi therefore means searching for cows. That means king satcha gavesi means going searching for the truth, like a farmer going looking for his cows. So one who wants to know the truth, he goes in search of truth. Anyway, gochara means the domain, the field where we meditators have to keep their mind focused. What is our gochara? Satipatthana gocharo. Mindfulness, or four foundations of mindfulness, is our domain. The body, feeling, consciousness, and phenomena. Rupa, Vedana, Chitta, and Dhamma. These are the four domain, meditator's domain. We have to be mindful of the body, mindful of feelings, mindful of the mind, and mindful of Dhamma or phenomena. This is our domain. That's all we have. To focus our mind, that is all we have. We have our body, we have our feelings, we have our mind, and we have various Dhamma. Dhamma here means sometimes it is translated as phenomena, sometimes mental activities, sometimes mind objects and so forth, whatever. Various things that, in other words, thoughts and that arise in our mind. All of them called Dhamma. And these are the things that we have. So we have to clearly understand our domain. Clearly understand the body. Clearly understand our feelings. Clearly understand our mind. And we must clearly understand our mental activities. Why? Because you know, everything is here. And Buddha said sometimes, Dhammaṃ kāyena paśyati. See the Dhamma through the body. If we understand our own, what we call five aggregates, exactly as they are, we are safe home. We will never go wrong. That is our domain. We say, when the Buddha described the Dhamma, he said, Pacchattaṃ veditabbo, ehi passiko, and so forth. He used these words to describe the Dhamma. Where is that? Say, for instance, we have one word we take from the qualities of Dhamma, ehi passika. What is ehi passika? Come and see, isn't it? Come and see. This is an invitation. When you receive an invitation, you ask three questions. Who sent the invitation? Invitation says, come and see. Three words, come and see. So you ask the question, who sent the invitation? Second question, where to go? Third question, to see what? For the first question, who sent the invitation, you get the answer, nobody. For the second question, where to go, you get the answer, nowhere. For the third question, to see what? To see nothing. Does this invitation make any sense? It doesn't make any sense. But it has a very profound practical sense. Where does this invitation? People say, Buddha sent this invitation. When we hear this word, come and see, people say, Buddha sent this invitation. Has the Buddha sent an invitation? Please come with your family to attend such and such a, your affectionate Gautama Buddha and send that invitation? He never sent such invitation. This invitation comes from us. It is here, this body and mind invites us to go inside and see. To see what? See the truth, see the Dhamma. Where is Dhamma? Where is the suffering? Suffering is Dhamma. Where is it? Where is the cause of suffering? Greed. Where is that? Where is the end of suffering, end of greed? Where is that? Friends, all of them are here in this body and mind. You never find the Four Noble Truths, Noble Eightfold Path, Dependent Origination, Factors of Enlightenment, anywhere hanging from clouds outside in books. in libraries, in shopping malls. You never find them. We all have with us. In us, we live with them. We have to look inside to get insight. We have to look at inside to get insight. So that is our domain. Normally, this is our laboratory. We have to use the lab. Everything we need to do our experiments is in this laboratory. Normally, people don't use their own laboratory. They borrow others' laboratory and think how others eat, how others drink, where, what others dress, what others eat, where they go, what they do, how look they are, and this and that. Our minds, eyes go always outside, ears goes always outside, mind goes always outside, think of that, this politics, that history, this chemistry, this. What are we doing? Can we get an iota of insight by doing so? Never. Honestly speaking, if we want to learn anything, any Dhamma, we always check our mind, look at it, go again and again and again, check it. Where does anger arise? Where the friendship arises? Where compassion arises? Everything and anything that we want to know is in us. Most of the time, we completely ignore us. How many of us, this is not selfishness. Sometimes people might think, oh, that is selfish to think about yourself. But there's a way to think about ourselves. In the meditation practice does not mean how I look like, what kind of dress I wear, what kind of food I eat, which party I go, how can I promote my ego. Not that kind of thinking. But to look at ourselves and ask this very simple question: am I happy? Having done trillions of things in your life, you ask one day, stop and ask yourself, am I happy? Answer will come, not yet. Then you do a few more things and for a few more years and ask, am I happy now? Answer comes again, not yet. Until you die, you keep doing all kind of things and ask, am I happy? Answer always will be the same. No, not yet. Why? No matter how many things we do, we will never be happy until we do the right thing. Only when we do the right thing, we will be happy. So long as we do wrong thing and ask ourselves whether we are happy, we will get the same answer and say no. So clearly we must understand ourselves and keep our practice focused on our own mental state, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, consciousness. These are things we have. And Buddha said, if we drift away and forgot our domain, then Mara will come and get us. I tell you a very cute little story that Buddha told in Sanyutta Nikaya. He has given many little stories. They look like Cinderella, you know, bedtime stories. Very nice little story. This story is very cute. He said there was a quail. That quail is a little bird. One day he was basking in the sun in an open field, relaxing, and then all of a sudden a hawk stooped down and got him, got this little quail. Then Quail said, "Oh yeah, my goodness, I am so unlucky today. Had I been in my own domain, this hawk in a fight is not a match. I would have defeated him easily if I were in my domain. Unfortunately, I went away and roamed in others' domain." Then this hawk asked him, hawk thought, "Gee, this fellow is in my claws now. I can eat him in a split second. And still he's boasting about fighting and defeating me." Then he said, asked him, "By the way, where is your domain?" He said, "That field with big clod of mud. That rice field with big clod of mud. That is my field." "Oh, that's all. I can take you there. I can drop you there. But remember, when I come next time, I'll get you. You cannot boast like this again." He said, "Okay." So he dropped him there. Next day, he came out and sitting on the big clod of mud, and the hawk came. As hawk was approaching this little quail, very quickly, like speed of light, ran under this clod of mud and hid himself. The hawk came and looked around, and he could not find him. He was so upset, disappointed, he beat his breast and flew away. And Buddha said, even this little quail was able to save his life as long as he was in his domain. Similarly, a meditator, Buddha said, meditator will be very safe if they understand their domain. They are safe, secure and protected in their domain, and they will get what they want from their domain. What they get, they will get deep insight, thinking, looking, contemplating, understanding their own body and mind. Friends, this is the time that people know almost everything about their body. Anatomy, biology, physics, chemistry, you name it, everything. Every tiny little thing. How much enlightenment have they got? Biologists, physicists, chemists, anatomists, and so forth, pathologists. How much insight, how much wisdom, how much enlightenment have they got? You see, why? They are watching outside other domains. Pathologists will cut up somebody's body. Anatomists will examine things outside. Biologists and so forth. What do we do in science laboratories? We learn all sort of things about the body. But have we got an iota of wisdom, insight, enlightenment? No. Without using any of those things, we can get good knowledge, insight, only when we mindfully watch our mind and body. Mindfully watch. We don't have to cut up the body. We just have to watch. As I said, it is the mind that makes everything, whether we are miserable or happy. No outsider, Buddha said, natang mata pita kaira anyeva pichi jnataka samma panihitang chittang seye sonang tato kare. Again he said, natang mata pita, no mother, no father, no other relatives can do so much good as well-directed mind can do. So, we have to direct our mind in right direction through clear comprehension, clear understanding of our mind and the body. That is our domain. Third clear comprehension is called suitability. Suitability means we must ask, is this practice suitable for gaining this goal? People say, you know, very, some people give a very, you know, superficial translation of the suitability, like meditator should ask himself or herself, is the shopping mall a suitable place to meditate? Is the public well, that vicinity is suitable place for meditation? Or going to a movie, sitting in the theater, movie theater, is a suitable? No, this is not the kind of suitability that Buddha was talking about. Buddha was talking about how much energy, faith, perseverance, mindfulness, concentration we must develop in order to gain insight. Is this suitable? Is this practice suitable? Say a certain thought arises in our mind. We must ask, is this thought suitable for attaining this goal? If the answer is negative, we will dismiss it, shun it, don't pay attention, don't cultivate it. There's a very beautiful discourse in Majjhima Nikaya called Dvedha Vitakka Sutta, two kinds of thought. Before attaining enlightenment, this is what the Buddha did. He divided his thoughts into two categories, unwholesome category and wholesome category. Whenever unwholesome thought arose in his mind, he said, this is harmful to me, harmful to others, harmful to both, therefore it is not suitable for attaining the goal, reaching the goal. When another thought arose, he says, oh, this is beneficial to me, it is beneficial to others, it is beneficial to both, and it therefore is suitable for cultivating in order to attain that goal. So suitability also comes from within, not outside. So we have to ask, is this suitable for attaining that goal? If I want to reduce greed, when certain thought arises in our mind, no matter how beautiful that thought is, if it increases my greed, I must realize that this greedy thought is not suitable for reducing greed. If the thought arises in my mind to reduce greed, as I mentioned yesterday, like desire to be desireless, then we must cultivate that desire. Buddha said, "Manang nisaya manang pahatabba, tannang nisaya tannang pahatabba." Cultivate one kind of greed to overcome another kind of greed. What is the greed? I want to cultivate the desire for attaining liberation. In order to overcome the desire that anchor us to samsara, tie us to samsara, one desire bind us to samsara, another desire help us to get out of samsara. So the desire that helps us to get out of samsara should be cultivated. And then manang nisaya manang pahatabba, cultivating one kind of conceit, we must overcome another kind of conceit. What is the conceit that we should cultivate to overcome conceit? Suppose we see somebody is meditating very, very ardently, diligently, consistently, honestly, sincerely meditating, and we can see the person making progress. We can see that. Then a pride arises in us. Gee, I also should do it. I can do it. If so and so can do it, why can't I do it? I am a human. I have body and mind. I am healthy. I have time. I also want to do it. So you arouse different kind of pride in order to overcome your ordinary pride. Ordinary pride is a negative kind of pride. What is the negative pride? That's called mana. Mana has a very beautiful meaning. Mana is measure. For instance, if you want to measure something, you use this as a measure. That's called mana. Or distance, or grain, or liquid, and so forth, temperature, and so forth, there has to be certain way to measure. That way is called mana. So we have negative mana, that is, I have so much wealth, so and so has so little wealth. I know so much, my knowledge is so big, so and so knows only very tiny little, not very much knowledge. I am so beautiful, so and so is so ugly. I am so popular, so and so is nobody knows on earth. That kind of comparison is called, that kind of mana is negative mana. That mana can be overcome by cultivating wholesome mana, and that is suitable for somebody to practice. So we must understand what is suitable for our mental development and what is not suitable. That is called clear comprehension of the suitability. Since I am running out of time, I want to make the other clear comprehension as quickly as possible. That is the clear comprehension of non-delusion. Non-delusion is like when we have feelings, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling. When neutral feeling arises, somebody who is not mindful, not having clear comprehension of non-delusion, the person is deluded. With that deluded state of mind, when a neutral feeling arises, that person might think, this is my soul, this is my self feels, self is neutral. I feel now, neutral feeling, this is where my soul is, neutral. This is delusion. So when one understand, one has clear understanding, clear comprehension, one would recognize this is a neutral feeling that has nothing to do with the notion of self. That's the feeling. Another example to explain mindfulness practice. Some places, some people have used certain examples, even in commentaries. One example is, among many, that this is the commentarial story. I don't know whether it really happened or not, but the story is a story. Even in modern time, certain meditators do that. The commentarial story is that when a certain monk was walking, he walked some distance, and then he stopped and returned to a certain point. and somebody was watching him walking. Instead of continuing his walk, he stopped at certain point and returned to a certain point. Then asked the Venerable Sir, "Have you lost something?" "Oh yes, I walked this distance without mindfulness. So I walked back to start my mindfulness again." This is what I call lost and found mindfulness. It is so silly if someone were to do it. Suppose you walk some distance and you suddenly realize that you have not been mindful. When you go back, can you find mindfulness that you have dropped somewhere for you to pick up mindfulness? Doesn't it sound very silly? How can you find mindfulness somewhere behind in a geographical place? And pick it up. Buddha said, when you lost mindfulness, that very moment you realize that you have lost mindfulness, become mindful from that point onward. That's how you practice mindfulness without getting deluded. Another example was somebody was lifting a cup to drink water, and when he brought it close to his mouth, he did not drink. He put it back. So somebody asked, "Why is that?" "Because I lifted the cup without mindfulness. By putting it back, can he find the mindfulness on the cushion to bring it back?" So this kind of people go to this kind of silliness when they don't have clear comprehension of non-delusion. Buddha's explanation is always, whenever you become unmindful, be mindful of unmindfulness. Becoming mindful of unmindfulness itself is mindfulness. So you realize that you have done something unmindfully. From that point onward, you develop your mindfulness. That is how we practice non-delusion, clear comprehension of non-delusion. We must clearly understand what mindfulness is and how we practice it whenever we lose it. With this, I like to close this afternoon talk, and during the Dhamma discussion, if you have questions, please don't hesitate to ask me, and we try to answer your questions.